It's hard to see yourself represented on the silver screen. In a world with less available roles to us, this industry can be so mean. So we're gonna make some changes in this town. Turn the male-driven media upside down. There's nothing that a woman can't do, so act like a girl. We're here to support you.
Welcome back to the Act Like a Girl podcast, everyone. You have Susie Dunn.
And Tracy Walker.
And we are here with
Chelsea Grow.
Hi, Chelsea.
Hi, ladies.
We're so excited to have you on.
Yes. I'm excited to be here. Good to see both your beautiful, lovely, funny faces.
Chelsea's one of our guests that like both Tracy and I independently knew.
Yeah.
Of each other.
This is our second time, right?
You're another return guest.
Yes.
Yeah, you were on during Black History Month.
Mm-hmm. That was a great episode. All right.
Talking about Mama Mabley.
I'm black and I'm proud.
But that's why we wanted you back, because you were like, that was mainly just like you talking about Moms Mabley.
Yes.
And like Black History Month. We want to know about Chelsea.
Oh, you want to know about Mom?
Yes.
Oh, you're so nice. Yeah, well, where do you guys want to start? We started from the beginning?
Okay.
Or
deep? When did you, like, okay, wait, where are you from?
I'm from Manassas Park. It's a little town about 35 minutes outside of D.C.
Okay.
So I grew up there, but I was actually born in Germany, though.
What?
So,
mm-hmm. Army kid? Army brat?
Air Force, yeah.
Oh, Air Force,
parents
yeah.
were in the Air Force, yes. Why both, that's why they're parents. Still alive. So. It's messed up.
That's kind of like the elite of the military, right? Air Force or no?
Yeah. Well, it's like, you know, both my parents did very like technical, like computer kind of stuff for the Air Force. And they didn't have to go into like hardcore combat. And thankfully, when I was born, there wasn't any real like wars going on. So, but I was born in Germany and we moved to Virginia when I was about 3. And I grew up there. And I lived there until I moved to Los Angeles 5 years ago. So, which is when I started stand-up comedy. I started stand-up when I'm about 3 months after I moved to L.A.
So you didn't move to L.A. with the intention of stand-up?
No, I moved to L.A. with the intention of doing acting, actually. Because mm-hmm. Growing up, I was always in plays and musicals, and I grew up singing.
Do you sing?
I do sing.
I didn't know that.
Well, I've been congested for the last 3 years, so it's been a delay.
The last 3 years?
Yeah.
What the hell?
You know, this dry heat has been killing my nostrils.
Oh, yeah. It's a climate adjustment you have to get used to. Yeah.
You need to get yourself a personal inhaler.
I do need to get mine.
Like a steam inhaler.
I didn't know you could sing.
Thanks.
Dang, I hate triple threats. So you do comedy, acting, and singing?
Yeah, girl. Oh. But it's okay.
It's just because it's just jealousy.
Yeah. I just always
Tracy, you're a triple threat. It's just, yeah.
I don't know why I think singing is like one of the ones I can't.
No, but singing, even if you can do it, it's like it is. It's like the one talent that I think everybody like wishes that they were better at or could do.
It's intimidating to sing.
Yeah.
Because you know what? Because when you're black, especially because. Yes. So many black people like can sing.
People just assume that black women can sing.
That's right. The thing. That's why I think like it's something I'm lacking, because I'm like, I can sing too.
It's all right. I have heard so many.
Oh, thank you.
See, I can sing, but I I can sing, but I ain't got no booty. So then it's like, I'd rather have either or. You know,
I'd rather have one or the other. That's true.
Right. I'm black and Puerto Rican. I have no booty. So I mean, that was just talk about a double rejection. I was like, all right,
but you can sing and you got your Afro, baby. Bump that.
Thank you.
Shoot.
Well, I got my Afro because it's free. So you know, I just.
But that makes up for that's your soul for this for the booty. You know what I'm saying?
Right. No, I have a big butt. It's just in my stomach. So, you know, that's where it's located.
I used to have a boyfriend that used to call me butt in the front. I said,
excuse me.
Take me back out of bed swimming. I'm thinking we was racing. I said, I beat you. He's like, that's why you got a butt in the front. He got mad.
Motherfucker.
You know, competitive. Yeah.
So he got butt hurt.
Yeah, he got butt hurt.
Oh.
Or front hurt. He got front hurt.
I was like, what?
And then you kicked him in the front and kicked him to the curb. That was a terrible joke.
I know. I kicked him in the front.
But at least you tried to help me, though. So, sisterhood.
Yeah, girl.
I will always support you.
Thank you.
I might do it, like, not funnily at all and terribly and not be able to speak.
But sometimes, same here, but you know.
Yeah, but I'm here for you.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Like, I just.
So, Chelsea.
Yes.
What gave you the audacity to do comedy.
Yeah, you were here for 3 months. Like, why? What was the...
I came here for 3 months. I had no idea what I was doing. None. I came out and I was like, oh, man, I want to act, but I don't know how to act. I was staying with my friend in her studio and her two cats. And
so you never took an acting class?
I took an acting class right before I came out here.
Okay. You went to college, right?
Yes, I went to college. I wanted to major in theater in college, but my father wanted me to like major in something real. Right. And which I don't even understand why I listened to him. He wasn't paying for it, you know, so I should have just taken what I wanted to take.
We do that. We do that.
I did the same thing.
Yeah. So I majored in broadcast journalism. And then after I graduated from college, I went to work at the CBS affiliate in Richmond, Virginia. And I was an associate producer there for about 2.5 years.
So you were like not a complete stranger to the idea of this world.
Oh, but absolutely not. No, I mean, those 2.5 years was hardcore behind the scenes work. That's where I really got my editing chops because I was the editor for the local talk show that I worked on. And I also was, you know, so used to doing that and so used to being in the booth, and we had a live show. So I run the board during the live show. So I had experience doing a lot of the behind the scenes work. And I think it definitely gave me a little bit of a leg up when I started, you know, coming out here and going and transitioning to be in front of the camera or on the stage, because I was like, I had an idea of what is going on behind the scenes. And it's kind of like just good knowledge to know. It's like, like knowing both sides of the coin. It helps. But I had been out here for 3 months, and all my living situations were so crazy. Nice, I mean, I live with my friend and her cats, and then I moved in with this European guy. He looked Asian but sounded Russian.
That's hilarious. He was from... Did you find him Craigslist?
Yeah, totally. I mean, where else would you find someone like that? I was totally Craigslist. I mean, well, and he's from this place called Kyrgyzstan, which I had never heard of, but yeah. So I lived with him, and I remember when I went to see the place, I asked if there were roaches. And he was like, because I saw one roach just kind of crawl across the floor. And I was like, maybe this is like a solo roach situation.
There's never a solo roach situation.
I had to learn that the hard way.
There's never a solo roach situation.
I had been here for 6 weeks. I had learned that the hard way. Because in Virginia, we have spiders. But spiders actually eat all the other bugs. Oh. So I was like, I wasn't used to like the threatening bugs just rolling around, hanging out, you know, sipping iced tea and stuff, you know.
Bold-ass roaches. They got some bold roaches in L.A.
Bold roaches.
Huge. Like humongous.
In Atlanta, you cut the light on, they run. Here, they look at you like,
no, they
bitch.
Just, they come out. They walk by.
Yeah, they be like,
I'm going to finish eating this first.
Right. They're like, oh, I was just about to put my makeup on, too. Thank you. Thank you for the lighting.
We had a roach in the bathroom, and my roommate, like, she was so freaked out, which I totally get it, didn't get a chance to kill it. And then I was like, well, it's fucking gone now. And then 2 days later, it was in my bedroom, and we killed it, finally. But that motherfucker was huge. It was, I'm not kidding. Like, it was like...
I used to find those in the closet when I was loading my shoes.
Like 2 inches.
Big.
Huge.
I had to kill it then because it's just going to be somewhere else.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. It was so, I mean, it was just disgusting. I mean,
so he lied to you. He told you that there weren't roaches.
No, there's no roaches here. No roaches, I promise. You know, I'm like, you know, your voice is sort of believable, but your eyes are lying. I don't know. Something in your eyes is like, this is not the truth. I was so desperate for a place. I just was like, fine, whatever. I gave him the $400. I moved in. And then the second day, I was about to start like unpacking, and like, you know, I'm so glad I didn't unpack, because I opened up the cabinets in the kitchen, and when I tell you, the infestation sprawled out. I'd never seen an albino roach before until day.
Oh, I was completely open. What, an albino? I saw seen some roaches.
I was like, I saw an albino roach. I was like, is that a yellowish is that a centipede? That's a roach.
All the nations.
Oh, right. It was the UN of roaches. I was just like, oh, this is their meeting place.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
So it was nasty. It was so nasty. So I was there for like a week. I made him give me my money back, and I rolled out. And then, thankfully, I found this gay couple to live with. They were both Latino gay men. I moved in with them in West Hollywood, staying on their couch. And then they would fight all the time. They'd come in the living room where I was sleeping. They were throwing dishes and cups.
Oh.
Jesus.
I mean, right. So and hilarious. Then one of the guys that whose apartment it was actually in his name, he actually tried to tell me that how to say wine. He's Cuban. He lived here for 10 years. And he said, oh, you know, I like to go to Trader Joe's and get a nice glass of Merlot, you know, or Cabernet. I said, oh, you know those or actually pronounce Merlot and Cabernet. And he was like, listen, Chelsea, okay, I passed my citizenship test 10 years ago, okay? I know how to speak, okay? I know how to say these words, all right? You don't tell me how to say Merlot and Cabernet. And I was like, I hope you don't say this in public. Like, I just really hope you only order one in the privacy of your own home. But
he's like, nah, he's so proper. He just don't understand.
Right.
Look, this sounds like a web series. You know, you got a lot to write about. Just on your journey.
Is that how it started? Is that was it was that just was, like...
They were the last straw for me, that couple. I was like, okay. And over those first 3 months, I had so many people tell me, like, I just tell people I'd vent. I would just literally vent about everything. And everyone was like, oh, you're funny. You should do stand-up. But I respected stand-up. I grew up watching, like, comedy all the time. I grew up watching Chappelle. My parents would have Pryor on. My dad had Pryor vinyls. I would listen to that kind of stuff. And it was just something that I would always listen to and appreciate and loved. But I never thought that I could do it. I used to sneak and watch Comic View as a kid. And then I was like, well, I mean, I might as well try it. So I was like, what's the least attended open mic? And I was like, perfect, Pig and Whistle, you know? And I went there and there was like 6 singers in there, a poet. And I was like, all right, this is it. And I went up there and I just kind of like rattled off everything. And people were like, oh, wow, you know, you should really look at taking this seriously. And I felt something when I got on stage. Yeah. I was like, it was good. And I felt, I was like, wow, like I feel really comfortable up here. Like I'm nervous, but I still feel comfortable. And then
I feel like you belonged. Like this is kind of where I belong in life. Like,
yeah, definitely. And then so that's what happened. I started. That was at this point. It was November 8th, 2012. So it's been almost 5 years.
That's exactly the way I started too. I just started venting. Like after college, I was so bitter. Mm-hmm. Like, cause I was like, "Where's the big job? Where's the nice pay?" And I was like, "They was like, you got to work your way up." I'm like, "That's the fuck. That's what I've been doing in college for 4 years. Well, really, 7 years, because it took me 7 years to get my degree. But
it's just that's like, fine. You got you know it. What I mean? Like, but degrees do not have time stamps.
You know. Like, and so I'm like,
I don't have a degree.
I
so
I was so bitter. I was like wearing a shirt that said, "Don't ask me for shit." And this man was like, "Sister, you don't want to say." I said, "That's why I got it on." It's like I was like gone. You know. So I would just vent. People were like, "Girl, you need to go down to open mic. You need to go." And I was like, "You." I'm like, "I ain't doing. I'm not a comedian." I thought it was like you have to be silly and clownish, and because I heard like comedians, I was a class clown. I'm like, I'm serious.
Right, right.
So it's not. I'm not trying to do that. I respected it so much, but like you said, once I hit the stage, that's where I belong. So
that's where you belong.
I totally relate to your story.
I think it gives a like really distinct place to put everything.
Yes.
Like so then you feel. You feel satisfied as opposed to just like if you do just like, which just venting into the void is really good, I think, and really cathartic. And especially if you can, you know, do it to a really good friend who you trust and you can just like get shit out. I think that's really important. However, having something like stand up is like an actual place and like a goal. Yeah. And like there's a better way to vent and you can like be smart about it and like.
Yes. And use it.
Yeah.
And use it, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, and that's the thing, what really. I've got, look, comedy is hard. Comedy is the hardest thing.
I ever done, you know, in my life.
Do you guys know who Stella Adler is?
Yes.
So Stella Adler, she's one of the three people who is credited with creating like modern techniques of acting. And, but her father on his deathbed, she asked him, "Dad, is it hard to die?" And he said, "Oh, that's no, dying."
Question.
And he said, "No." And he told her, he said, "No, dying is easy. Comedy is really hard, though."
It is.
And like,
yeah.
And so like, even on his deathbed, he was like, "No, comedy." And it is. It's hard because it's laughter is an involuntary response. You can't make somebody fake laugh. People can just fake applause at something or whatever, but they cannot fake laugh. Like a genuine, there's nothing like that genuine belly laugh.
And a lot of times there's like no way to describe why something makes you laugh.
Yeah.
And like exactly. That's why it's so cool that we're starting to get, I mean, you know, slowly but surely starting to have more diversity in comedy, because like I'm sick of the same heterosis white boy humor, you know? Yeah, it's just like not for me.
Yeah.
It never has been, and I'm over it. And now, you know, we have so much more diversity and like we're, you know, especially the two of you are a part of building that diversity, and I think that's so fucking cool.
Uh-huh. But
it's repetitive, though. So
That
heterosexual white boy comedy is very repetitive.
Yeah,
you know, they're all saying the same thing. They're basically just tagging each other. It's just one continuous joke that's not funny.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you came with that testimony that they were a message from is it Stella?
Mm-hmm.
Her dad to say on his deathbed that dying was easier than comedy. Because, you know, that makes me feel better about what I've sacrificed and what I'm experiencing. Because I'm like, really, is it this hard? Because some people get it easier or they have it another way and they're like, oh, comedy's not that hard. I'm like, comedy is the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. Mm-hmm. And I've been homeless. I've been abused. I've been addicted. I've overcome everything.
You know, it's like, well, it's the rawest thing.
Yeah.
You're like, just like putting everything onto a platter for people to interact to.
It's one of the, it's still to this day, one of the rawest forms of art because, I mean, look at, as much as like, yes, I love films and everything like that and acting and I respect that as a craft as well. But I mean, there are no special effects. There is no cut. It's literally you and a microphone and that's it. You're lucky if you have a stool and a glass of water on stage with you. You know,
and you like the leader, like what you call that? The orchestra leader?
You're the conductor. You're the conductor.
When to listen, when to laugh, listen, laugh, listen. That's so much power. Okay, now laugh. Okay, laugh. That's power. And it all comes from you and the way you time it, you deliver it, you orchestrate it. Oh my God. It's a high. When you do good and when you do bad, it's just as bad.
Well, this reminds me of
that. It's always hot when you bombing. You ever notice the back of your neck get hot?
Oh, yeah, you're seriously.
Like, why am I sweating? It's 10 degrees.
Why you can't sleep after
it? I'm doing this show.
And I also, like, kind of black out. Like, I, like, can't remember what joke I already said and what joke I haven't said yet. I'm just like, oh, fuck.
Oh, no.
Where am I?
Out of body experience.
I'm like, all of a sudden, I'm just, like, wasted. I mean, I'm not, but, like, my brain is just like,
your brain's like, fuck. Oh, I can't.
But this reminds me of that story that you told about your friend, that the guy after her show was just like, you were so funny, I want to eat you out for...
Oh, yes, yes. One of my homegirls, I did a show with her, and she crushed, right? And I noticed she was talking to this guy afterwards, and she ended up leaving with him. So then the next morning, I saw her at another mic the next afternoon, and she had this big look on her face. I said, girl, what's going on? She said, oh, girl, that guy, you know? I went back to his place and I thought we were gonna hook up and he was like, no, I just wanna eat you out. You're so funny. And she said he ate her out all night and the next morning.
She got her first groupie.
Power and comedy.
Yo, you know what she said? She said, girl, I'm about to get these punchlines tight. All right. She over that notebook. She was like, tag, tag, tag. She was like, roof this here, tag, tag. She said, I'm about to be killing it. She said, if this was off now, I can't wait to talk about that Chris Rock level. She said, I'm about to be good.
I'm just getting my little ropes together. Right.
There's nothing that can combat pussy power meets comedy power.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, like, right?
That's true.
And the fact that he's not intimidated, he's like, you're so funny. He said, like, I just want to like dine in. I'm
because it's already power in the pussy. Then you gotta think funny is everything. Because you
yes.
A guy, I don't care if you don't like him or whatever, but he make you laugh. He's starting to look more
attractive. Oh yeah, no, that's
pussy and funny.
Funny, nerdy, like funny, again. Smart men. Oh my God. I can't. That's it. That's all I want.
He got a lot going on. He might not look that, but we can work that out.
I don't give a shit about that.
Smart, we're gonna have a life.
Right, as long as you look good below the belt, we good. All right, we can talk. We can at least talk about it. You know, we can at least start the conversation.
Yeah, I don't know. Y'all think that's a big thing?
What,
the below the belt?
Yeah, girl. Look, what about to me, it? If you're gonna be with somebody,
I've never experienced a small penis. So I don't know. I don't know how bad it could be, but people have told me about it. But
I saw one that was so small one time that I vomited, and yeah.
Onto it?
Yeah. No, I saw it. I was in college, and the guy we were making out, and he got undressed, and I saw it, and I literally had to blink my eyes.
It's a grown man with a little baby, with a boy.
It was a Vienna sausage. And the reason it made me nauseous because I hated Vienna sausages growing up. My mom used to force me to eat them, so I had a whole sensory memory thing that happened, and I just vomited. And thankfully, we had eaten Chipotle earlier, and he was like, oh my gosh, what's so wrong? I was like, you know, I think I just ate that burrito too fast. I think I'm going to have to go. You know, I'm sick.
You had the best stories. Oh, my God. Oh, now I get it. That is a lot. Like a Vienna sausage, that's small.
I mean, I think the smallest dick.
I mean, after my kisses, 10 minutes of my kisses, if that's all you got down there, I got to go.
I got to go, too. That's,
I think the smallest dick I've ever encountered, when he took his pants off, he said he pointed at his dick, like with his hands, and he goes, "There it is." Oh. and then we didn't actually have sex. We never had sex, but that happened. And then we met on Bumble, went on two dates, and then literally pretty much exactly a year later, his ex-girlfriend, who he was dating at the time, showed up where I work looking for me, saying that he had cheated on her with me. All this guy with the smallest dick that I've ever encountered. We went on two dates. No, we went on two dates. And I said to her, I was like, well, thank God he's your ex, because that guy sucks for lots of reasons. And then I ended up giving her and all of her friends shots, and we became...
Oh, that was nice.
When see, we were like, we yeah, were cool. She was fine. Like, yeah. She wasn't even mad. She just... I think she just wanted me to know.
Yeah.
But I was like, that dude was so insignificant. Like, honestly, the only reason I remember him is because he sucked so bad.
Right. He's notorious.
Yes.
Like, you're like notorious, so awful person in my memory.
But if he hadn't have been so awful, I probably would have been like, who?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
If he didn't say, there it is, then I wouldn't have remembered him.
Yeah, right. Here it is. This is it. The littlest, the least you can get.
I couldn't believe he said that. I was just like, get out. Like, get out.
Yeah, you have to, because, I mean, come on now.
You know, I just feel like, you know, and that's the whole thing. Like, guys... See, straight. This is why I have to have gay men in my life, because the straight men that I encounter, I feel like out here, it's like they you know, so many women are so desperate in this town that they feel like they just want to have a man around.
Yeah.
And it's not like, it's not all women by any chance, but I think it gets lonely out here, especially if you're out here chasing your dreams. Yeah. It's so easy to get lonely.
Yeah.
And so a lot of women will tolerate. Like, I know male comedians that, you know, are complete douchebags, you know, like they
both are.
Yeah. And then they literally, like, they go from sleeping in their car, and then you see them 2 weeks later, they've got on, you know, like the fresh J's, they've got like a new car, and they're like, yeah, I'm living in Santa Monica now. And I'm like, wow. They're like, oh, I met this girl, I told her I loved her, and she asked me to move in. I'm like, is that it?
Always.
I love you is currency now. Like, I mean, I thought
it's always that.
But see, but you know, a woman, you know, you tell a guy you love him, you get kicked out.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Like, oh, it's so true.
Don't get pregnant. Don't start no shit.
Right, right.
Just fucking suck and shit.
Just keep it simple. Just keep it simple.
Don't like try to make actual plans.
They're like,
no,
like,
titles.
Dude, that is like titles. My thing. Like, the minute I try to make actual plans with people, or the minute that I hold you accountable for the plans that you've made with me, they just disappear. Like, it's just immediately they're like, oh, actually, I can't see a future with you.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, bitch, I was just trying to say that we made plans on Saturday night and we should keep those. I'm not talking about putting a ring on my finger.
And that's the thing. They're so quick to go to these extremes. You know, it's like, no, sir, you, I had a guy say, all right, I'm going to take you out on a date. I'm going to pick you up on Wednesday at 10 o'clock. He told me this on a Sunday, right? Every day leading up to the date, he texts me, don't forget about Wednesday.
What?
Don't forget about Wednesday, 7 o'clock. Wednesday, he texted me, last time he texted me was Wednesday at noon. He said, I'll see you tonight. I'm going to pick you up, blah, blah, blah. 7 o'clock comes, I don't hear nothing.
What? 8
o'clock comes, I don't hear nothing. 11 o'clock, 11 p.m. comes. And I wasn't waiting. At this point, like, I had already gone out, but I just noticed that he didn't respond. So then the next afternoon, after it'd been a full 24 hours, I hit him up. I was like, hey, what happened to yesterday? He's like, listen, okay, like, you seem kind of desperate. And so he was like, maybe
what the fuck is that shit?
And I was like, and you seem to have selective amnesia, because I remember you saying you were going to go out at 7, and I'm just saying, like, what happened to 7? You know, see,
it's also such bullshit, because it's like, just say what actually happened, which is that somebody else hit you up that you would have rather go on a date with,
and that's fine.
And you went on a date with them,
and that's
don't try to turn this around and make me be like a crazy person. And like, don't tell me that you can't see a future with me. Just tell me that I annoy the shit out of you, and that you don't want to spend time with me anymore.
But see, you say you don't want to be accountable, and that's not. type of thing you're trying to do. You know what I mean?
Just, that's my issue. Because it's like, look, you're not my only option either. Okay. You. Right. Because, you know.
Yeah. And I plan on this. So.
Yeah. I mean, it's like my whole thing is like, it didn't ruin my night. I went out. I had my night. I had fun.
Course. But why did you call saying, me and like, say, don't forget. Don't forget. Don't add that extra shit. You know
what I'm saying? Try to put it on me like, oh, you're desperate and thirsty. Like, I had a guy that I didn't talk to for 10 days. And then I texted him and said, hey, what's up? And he was like, oh, wow. You're coming on kind of strong. It's like,
so fragile.
Fuck you.
Half of a month has passed since I spoke to you.
Make me like use like what people try to use for gay, like punks. No, they're punks. My gay friends aren't punks. These gay men treat me better than any straight guy I've ever known. They put out the chair for me. They make sure I'm okay. I'm fed. They treat me like a woman. You know what I'm saying? They take care of me and they handle theirs. You know what I'm saying? As a gay man, these little punk is somebody that try to date rape you and then try to blame it on you. You know that's a punk. You know what I'm saying? And that's how they act. Like what they saying, they put it on you. It's like, oh, don't forget. Oh, I love you so much. And then you call. Oh, why you chomping on so hard? That's a punk. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Why are you so scared to be?
It's narcissism. It's narcissism. Yeah. There's a lot of we were talking about this the other night. There's narcissists in this town. There's a lot of sociopaths. I think. Yeah.
Sociopaths.
Yeah. There's a lot of people that out here that are just really mentally ill.
No empathy at all.
They're no empathy.
You don't understand where I'm coming from.
And they're out here trying to become a star because they're trying to fill a void because someone didn't hug them enough growing up. And so instead of like dealing with the therapeutic, you need.
I know that's therapy. The best. That's the best. Is like the last guy that ended things with me. He basically like he said that because we had made plans and then he canceled on them. Like basically when we were supposed to have plans and I called him out on that shit. And really good person, really good guy. But like I called him out on that shit and he was like, God, I just like for the first time in my life felt like a fuckboy and like I don't want to feel that way. So in my mind I'm just like, oh, you don't want to feel like a fuckboy, so you're going to completely remove yourself from dating in a situation instead of just not acting like a fuckboy.
Yeah, exactly.
And like sticking to a plan and like being a real human.
And that's my thing.
Why is that a thing? Like, why are you just complacent with your own shitty behavior? Why don't you show up? And
like that are not. They just... they maintain that behavior because it's never just in one area of their life that they exhibit that behavior.
So, right.
You know what I'm saying? It's like I wait tables, and I have worked in restaurants with people who are actors. And I know this is, audio, but I'm doing big air quotes. This is some actors, and they like to walk around. And I remember when my boss hired me, when I told him I was a comedian, he loved it. He said, oh, I love hiring comedians. A lot of comedians work at this restaurant because I found that comedians work really hard. And a lot of the actors, are extremely lazy and make excuses. And I witnessed that firsthand. Sure. I mean, one of my coworkers, he was an actor and he would never check on his tables. He literally would get the initial round of drinks, get their food in, and then he'd disappear on his phone for 15, 20 minutes. I mean, one time his table came up to me and was like, hi, we want more drinks. We want more food. We want more. Like, they wanted to spend money, and they had to get up and find somebody to spend money. And I'm like, and then he loves to walk around complaining about where he is in his career. He's like, this town sucks, and I should have made it by now, and I studied in Chicago.
Bitch, it's you.
And I'm like, you cannot handle a four top. Okay, and you want some big Hollywood producer to trust you with a multi-million-dollar movie script role?
Thank you.
You can't handle a four top. Like, that's money. You're walking away from money. Exactly. When I'm working, I'm on the floor, okay? And my eyes are
serious.
You know why? Because that's money. Oh,
I'm here for
the
money, baby.
Okay, the second that cocktail gets low. Oh, you want another Mai Tai? You want another martini? Sure, you want that with Top Shelf? Thank you. Okay.
But that's your money. Why am I here? I'm not here for no other reason.
You need to be on it out here. Like, everything has to look good. Like, out here, the food has to look good. If the food that you're selling, looks better than you do, like, what are you expect?
Water out here has to look good.
Water,
like, people inspect their water, like, as they should.
Yeah.
But people here fucking inspect their water glasses.
Right.
Everything has to look and be like, it's exactly like you said. I mean, I think that's true. I think that's really like good life advice in general. That's how I feel about my health, including my mental health. It's like the minute that I like ended a relationship that, even though the guy was amazing, I love him still to this day, we ended things. Then I like started eating healthy. Then I started the podcast. Then I stopped drinking as much.
Damn.
Then
that's what I
was in therapy for like a year at that point. Then I, and it's like, And then my then I started developing comedy. It then I started so writing even more. Yeah, it's just like the more that you, like you said, like, and then I also got, you know, my job that I have now, my serving job that I love. Yep. Like, it's just like, if you can get
that's a lot,
all of your life to line up like that, I think. Yeah. And it's so true. I think like however you're treating who you're dating, I think is probably a reflection of like how you're treating your career, how you're treating your friends.
You opened up all that space so that like other things could come in. And that's what where I'm at right now. Like, I'm working towards like getting into a discipline. You know, I mean, I actually just started therapy myself.
Start, but I haven't had a chance. But yeah, I told Susie I will be.
Oh, so I'm joining you guys. I need it. You know, and I used to.
You felt so good after your first session.
And I used to be so ashamed about saying that I did therapy because I think
because we're black.
And people say like, oh, in Hollywood, don't tell people that you're this because they'll think you're unstable and they won't give you a role. I'm like, I'm not even auditioning yet. Okay, so let me just
Marilyn Monroe.
Everybody needs therapy.
Like, if Marilyn Monroe could exist the way that she did.
And every actress has therapy, believe that.
You need it. Seriously. You need to work through that. Like, I mean,
you spend 3 months being somebody else, another character.
And then you're also getting paid 70 cents to the dollar or 60 cents or 50 cents, depending on your ethnicity, to the dollar of your male counterparts. Yeah, you need fucking therapy. Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, like, and I actually, you know, this is how I know therapy is powerful, because, you know, I've had all this pain, you know, from my childhood and everything that's carried into adulthood. And I didn't realize how much it was blocking my creativity. And I'm at the point now where I was like, no, I need to get whatever this is off of me, because I want to get my idea of a good day to me. Is I just want to like start to finish. Like, I want to be creating. I want to be making schedules for myself. Like, I want that to be a habit. Like, I want it to be like, that's just who I am.
We also talked about how like it was really nice for you too to even just like be able to laundry that list. Like, because that first initial therapy
is an unloading.
Session is just an unload. It's literally just like, then this happened, and then this happened. And like, and being able to like say all of that straight for an hour and have it all be about you and not have like someone be like, you just get to like kind of hand it over to someone. It's like taking a huge shit.
Yeah. Oh, girl, that's the life. You'd be like, oh, I just lost 10 pounds.
And your stomach's like got a little food baby at first,
birth and you move on. Now, that's what happened with my like. I actually came up with a joke at the end of therapy from my dad, which I never thought I'd be able to do. But like, because one of the incidences that happened is I had an evil stepmother that was like just literally like, you think Cinderella's stepmom was bad? Add 20,000 watts. Like, she was crazy.
Well, also add the cultural difference too,
right? Exactly. The cultural difference, and then also the fact that my stepmom was the woman that my dad had an affair on my mother with, you know. So it was just there's a lot of stuff there. But I remember when I was 11, my sister and I had talked to my dad. We're like, listen, you know, she's crazy, okay? Stepmom is cuckoo. So, you know, we used to call her tapped, you know. Because crazy didn't do it justice. We used to be like, girl, she's tapped. Like, as in, like, you tap her head and it's empty. Yeah. So, like, I remember one time we talked to him. We said, Dad, look, she's crazy. Can you help us? Can you, I don't know, be a dad? And then.
What a concept.
Right. I don't know. Can you try that? And I remember he sat us down. We had a, here come the air quotes, family meeting. And he pulls out this big Bible and he goes to this verse.
There you go.
Right. Misquoting like crazy. Mm-hmm. They love to misquote. And so my dad reads the Bible. He reads a verse where it says a man should lay down his life for his wife. And he said, so girls, because of this verse, I have to put, you know, I have to put Michelle, my wife, before you. Like, her needs come before you. Her wants come before you. She comes first before you girls, right? And I don't know, when he first told me that was a very devastating day for me.
That's a lot of pain.
It was a devastating day for me, because that was the day I realized my father couldn't read. I was like, oh, you can't read. I'm in trouble. Because half of the DNA of half of me is illiterate. So I don't even know.
And you got alone this long without even knowing that. Because he straight think he can read.
And I'm like, you can't read. And all this time, I was feeling like I wasn't worthy because, you know, I wasn't a wife. And then, and so then I put in my mind, I was thinking.
Oh, like I got to be a wife.
Yeah.
Respect. Jesus.
Yes.
Christ.
I didn't even realize the connection because my father was like, no, unless you're a wife, you're not going to come first.
Jesus so all Christ. I spent of my, course. My childhood. Of course.
I spent, I spent my you know, most of my life just trying to be somebody's first, be somebody's girlfriend.
And that's on top of what society plays on.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, right. Yeah,
that's
yeah.
a lot.
But I mean, this is all off. Sorry. Oh yeah, no, this is all off someone who can't read.
Okay, so you started doing stand up after living here for 3 months. You went to that open mic to start, and then what? Like, how did it take off from there? Did you just start doing?
I started doing open mics that I could find online on Google specifically, and then and that wasn't that many. I tried websites like Bad Slava. They were very outdated, so I was having trouble finding mics. But a friend of mine actually referred me to this one mic that was going on. It was at this place called Westward Brewing Company, and I had been doing it about 3 months. I went there, and one of the comedians told me about a website called The Comedy Bureau. Mm-hmm. And then once I found that website, I felt like I was set because The Comedy Bureau is a very accurate website. Yeah. It lists all the open mics. And when I found out about that, I was just like, oh, I can. And I had my car at the time. So I was nonstop. I would go to a mic downtown, a mic in Silver Lake, a mic in Hollywood. I'd go to a mic in the Valley all in one night. And I would just go boom, boom, boom. And then that's really what got my chops up. And then after going to Westwood Brewing Company, they had a mic on Wednesdays and Fridays. Mm-hmm. And it was right on UCLA's campus, so a lot of students would come. And so I ended up fill-in hosting. After going there for 3 months, they asked me to fill-in host. They were like, hey, you're funny. You know, you can host sometimes. And then that helped me get my hosting gigs and my hosting chops up a lot. And I did that for about a year before the place closed down. So,
and you started hosting other places too?
Yes, I started hosting other open mics. I actually hosted a mic of my own at a Armenian restaurant around the, like a, and then I did that. So I was that's how I really got into hosting initially, was at that point for sure. So, you know, that's always awesome. Grabbing the mic.
And then now you're hosting the Mel's open mic.
Yes, I host. So we have a rotation of hosts just because, you know, for everyone's schedule. But I do host the first Wednesday of every month. I do host Mel's drive-in open mic. And that came about because a good friend of mine, Anya Malik, he's started that open mic about a year ago. And then Anya's one of my OG comedy friends. Like I met him actually at Brew Company. And I just saw him reading, and he looked like a real comedian. I don't know, something about him just was, I was like, oh, let me say hi. And then we've just become, over the years, have become really good friends, and I definitely respect him a lot, and he gives me a lot of great advice. And so he asked me if I wanted to take over, like, hosting the mic when he got an opportunity to do a show at Hollywood Hotel that he produces now. So that was just kind of how that worked out. And I've noticed with comedy, that's how it happens a lot. You know, you just have to keep going out there and keep working. And, you know, that's why I never got into the whole click part of comedy. A lot of things in comedy can be very clicky.
Yes.
Right. People get very like, oh, I'm in this sect, or I'm in the alt group, or I'm in the black group, or I'm this and that. I got on anywhere I could get on stage, you know, because, I mean, comedy is comedy, and you can learn something from anybody, really.
Yeah.
Like, I
feel the same way. It's like, because sometimes it's just, some comedies just do the black room, some comedies just do, like, I meet a lot of people that don't want to do the gay rooms, but a lot of gay comics do the gay rooms, and like you said, the hipsters do the hipsters room.
Right.
It's just... to me, it's like you gotta.
And there's bad comedy in all those rooms. Yeah. And there's just like there's good comedy in all those rooms.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I just feel like with me, I came out here from Atlanta, being a black population like that. I didn't want to get caught again in the black. And a lot of people don't understand that. I don't want to get caught in the black rooms. Because to me, coming up the time I did, I feel like it's segregation a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? When it's just no other race in the room. It's like, I'm not comfortable with that because I have more to say. Than to black people. You know what I mean? I'm speaking to the world. You know what I'm saying? A lot of times I'm speaking to the choir when I'm talking to black people. And they're like I can say my experience from being black. They know that. You know what I mean? They want to see something else or hear something else. So it's like, I don't know. I just, to me, it's like I have to do mainstream.
I mean, yeah. I mean, that's for me, you know what it is? I don't want anyone. I realized how powerful comedy was when I did a show in the Valley. And I had an older, like, kind of like Grinch, Scroogey kind of a guy come up to me. And he was like, young lady, I had a bad day today. And, you know, I just want to talk to you. He said, you know, I was having a really bad day. Today was probably one of the worst days of my life. But, and I normally don't come here. He said, I live across the street. But I stopped coming here because I feel like a lot of the comedians were terrible. And not, they were yelling and not saying anything worth value. And he said, and I saw you perform. And he said, you made me have a better day. So I think I'm going to have one of the best night's sleeps that I've had in months.
Yeah.
And this is a guy, this was an old white man who definitely used the N-word back in the day, you know?
Like, I see you, but I see you. I see you, but I see you.
Yes, yes, yes. And so when he said that, powerful. I was like, wow, yeah. Like, this is keeps a going, powerful, right? Like,
this is why I do this. Like,
this is why I do this.
Yeah, I can miss 5 more meals for this.
Right. Seriously. Right. I was like, I need to lose time. I need to lose some more weight anyway. Yeah. Keep that struggle diet going.
That
okay?
happened to me this Sunday at Mother's Day show I did at J Spot.
Oh, yeah. And you loved that show.
Yeah. I love that show. And I love that show so much. I'm going to tell Chelsea, I hadn't smoked weed in like years. Girl, mm-hmm. I toked that night.
Yes!
I was like, yeah, yes! Like, it was so nice. All the comedians were like, it was so, and the lady came up to us. She just kept thinking, she's a very beautiful black lady. She kept thanking us and thank you guys so much. Thank you guys so much. And then she finally told me, she said, y'all just don't know what y'all do. She's like, I've been through 3 funerals this week. 3. And she said, and they were young people, like 40, 30, and even younger, 20. And she was like, and you guys, if y'all can make me laugh, do that. And that just touched my heart in a way. I was like, you know what? Ain't nothing better else to do. You have your trying times doing comedy. It's hard as hell. But what the reward?
That's why I would do it, you know?
Okay, so you're hosting the show. What's the next step? You're hosting this open mic. Are you hosting other stuff?
Well, I actually did. I've been getting some great hosting opportunities. I did just host this comedy film festival that happened at Flappers in Burbank on May Day.
Amazing.
That was fantastic. I mean, and that was another thing where I met. It was a friend of a friend, and he needed someone to host. And it opened my eyes to so many different ways that I could host things. I mean, comedy, really, if you're a comedian, you can host anything. You could host a luncheon. Yes. You could host.
I mean, look at the Oscars.
Yeah. Right.
Why
exactly.
They always pick us to host the big shows, the Oscars, the Grammys. You know, it's like always a comedian somewhere.
Neil Patrick Harris.
Right. Yeah. Because when they announce the wrong Oscar winner, you know, you gotta
got it.
You gotta have a joke there.
Jimmy Kimmel.
It's time for a joke.
But, it's okay. We forgive him now because of the health care. Speech that he gave about his kid. So
good. All right, so now we're
team Jimmy again, and it's fine.
That's all that matters. I'll be back. But I mean for real though, I just really that's my thing with hosting. Like, I would love to start another show. I want to start another show that I wanted to start off monthly and then maybe move it up to bi-monthly or twice a month.
That's
The thing is, I had a show that I produced a year ago. It was called Wise Words, and I specifically called it Wise Words because I realized that I know a lot of different comedians from a lot of different groups, a lot of different quote unquote cliques or sects, but they're very intelligent comedians. They have something to say, something memorable, something powerful. And so I was like, words really are like their power, you know? And so anybody that's using their words in a wise way and making people laugh, those are the kind of comedians that I want on my shows. And so I produced that show, and then I did only one show because I ended up having some issues with my co-producer. Him stealing money from me, and it's okay.
It happens, yeah.
Yeah, you know. And
get the right click, because I've been through a lot before I met Susie. I've tried to do my own web series with other people. Like, oh my God, so many other comedians and people. It just didn't fit. It wasn't a balance.
Yeah.
So but I did, you know, I ran ahead and branded.
That's a good
brand. Branded the name. Yeah, I branded the name Wise Words. I went in and did that.
And that's you.
So, yeah.
That's your comedy. That's you. That's just a part
true.
Of your brand.
That's
true. So you.
So that's my future. You know, my main thing now is this next year, what I want to focus on overall is I want to focus on getting better at everything that I do. I want to focus on becoming a stronger comedian. I just want to focus on the work. I want to get myself into a habit and a discipline so that I can become the best comedian that I can be. And I want to go on the road and, you know, because I'm at a point with comedy where I'm like, all right, I need to get out bored. Of LA more as too. Much as possible. Yeah. And I need
you
to
get bored them. Being around here. And you can only do so many mics the same time. All
yeah, yeah. Yeah. You know, I want to do stand up in creative places. I want to go to Georgia and do it at a KKK rally. Yeah. You know, I just want to like that's do stand up there. There.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, how do I
and
get
and be
out
like,
of this?
I survived. I survived stand up at a KKK.
We go to Alabama and in front of a bunch of Donald Trump. Supporters.
Right. Like, I want to perform for some sharks, some Australian hammerhead sharks. And they'd be like, oh, you know, like, that was a good joke. I'm not going to eat you today. Like, thank you, shark.
Yeah.
Comedy will save your life. I know people that have gotten out of speeding tickets.
Seriously.
For telling the officer a joke.
Say you're a comedian. Say a joke.
I used to get right out one. Of that. Yeah. I used to get out of shit in high school all the time for telling jokes.
Mm-hmm.
What? Smile, tell a joke. Be well, white and pretty.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There you go.
I think it's probably the latter two are probably the, like, real reasons. But, yeah. Yeah.
What was one of your favorite jokes you told that got you out of a...
Oh, man. I don't know. That's, like, so much pressure.
Oh, no. I was just curious. I was like, yeah.
I have no idea. I just, like...
So many. Just survival.
Yeah. Yeah. I would just be like, no, you're not gonna... A lot of times I just, like, laugh and tell people no.
Oh, well, you had a no incident, too, with, recently. With the Cinco de Mayo.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. We can't. I don't want to, like, go into details, but yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, but I know, what? Like, well, no, I don't want to get, yeah. Okay. But, I mean, I'm just saying, like, I know on Cinco de Mayo.
I just told people on Cinco, white people on Cinco de Mayo that they couldn't wear sombreros and ponchos.
Oh, good.
Right.
Yeah.
Good looking out.
Yeah. I was just like, no, this is not happening.
Please don't.
See, that's why I love Susie. Susie will be that white person to go up to another white people. She's like, listen, white people, we can't do this.
Yes.
Yeah. And then they were like, well, what about this other brown person? And I was like, I can't speak for that brown person. What I'm saying is, I'm talking about you white people.
Right. Like, okay.
Don't know shit about no poncho and sombrero, so don't wear it, okay? All right.
Thank you.
Put your ass down.
Yeah. That's why I love Susie. Woke and white. Woke and white.
She woke as fuck. That's what I call her. I'm like, my co-host is white and woke as fuck.
Okay.
Hashtag white and woke as fuck.
Hashtag eye drops. Eyes open.
Eye drops every day.
Eye drops.
Okay. So what does feminism mean to you?
You know, feminism just means like, being in control of yourself, being empowered by yourself, like just equality, really. Mm-hmm. It's just equality. Women shouldn't have to, we shouldn't have to minimize ourselves or adjust for just to, you know, please men or please other races of women or people, you know, or other religions or, you know, feminism is about in taking all of you as a woman and owning it, you know. Yes. It's about ownership. That's one of the things I'm learning from, like I said, going to therapy, from, you know, just all the stuff I've gone through, is just taking ownership of who you are as a woman and totally, and whatever that is, that to me is feminism. It's like, I own who I am as a woman. I don't make apologies for it. And I do deserve to have, you know, equal rights and equal pay and all those kinds of things. And that's how it should be. And until that happens, I'm going to keep fighting for it. And I'm going to keep talking about the discrepancies. So...
love it.
That's amazing.
Yes.
That's all right. Well, how can we follow you?
Oh, please follow me on social media. I'm on Instagram and Twitter at Chelsea G Comedy. So that's at C-H-E-L-S-E, letter G, and comedy. And then it's just Chelsea Grow on Facebook if you want to add me. My last name is G-R-E-A-U-X as an X-ray. So my name sounds bougier than I am, but it's spelled
it's
bougier.
Pretty bougie.
I'm like, I don't know who I am. I'm a black girl. I was like born in Germany. I got a French last name. I'm half Puerto
Rican. Definitely got some French in you.
I'm just
somebody had some French in them.
somebody did have some French in them. Yeah. Probably my grandma. Oh, that was my grandmother. Yeah. Thanks, grandma.
All right. Well, as always, thank you guys so much for hanging out with us this week.
And tuning in.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was
keep
fun.
In touch.
Find us on Facebook.
And Twitter.
And Instagram. At Act Like a Girl TV.
And Gmail us. Act Like a Girl TV.
At gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
And then our website is actlikeagirl.tv. And there's a get involved page on the upper right hand
corner.
Please
get involved.
Yeah.
Please let us know what you think.
Email us. We want to interview you.
Yeah.
Especially if you're a woman who runs something like a podcast or an open mic or a stand-up show.
are you a badass?
Yeah.
You believe in feminism and you protest and you help us out.
Especially if you're not white, hit us up. we like you too, white girls. We like you too.
But anyway, oh, and also exciting news. We have our next show at Nerdist Showroom July 9th at 7 p.m.
Our live podcast, second one. The first one was so badass, it sold out.
Yes.
Oh my God, you can hear the crowd outside. On Sunset Boulevard. It was bomb.
So we'll see you there. Thanks, guys. Bye.